Ryan fixed the leather patch that covered the puckered ruin of his missing left eye, a gift from his brother Harvey. In grim efficiency, Ryan then did a weapons check, briefly touching his small arsenal of blasters and knives. Pulling out his Sig Sauer, Ryan clicked off the safety and then racked the slide to chamber around for instant use. Everyone was back on their feet, so it was time to wreck the rest of the redoubt to see if there was anything useful in the storerooms. There was something odd about this redoubt, though. The air coming from the wall vent was warm instead of cool. Sniffing carefully, Ryan couldn't detect the smell of an electrical fire or lava. Last year, a jump to a tropical redoubt had the group arriving just as the local volcano erupted. They had barely escaped, with chunks of the molten stone actually arriving with them at the next redoubt. And that was cutting the razor edge of life just too damn close by anyone's standards.
Let's get ready, people.
The rest of the companions pulled their blasters and checked their loads. Christy closed the cylinder of her .38 caliber S&W revolver.
I'm ready.
Dean leveled his Browning high power.
I got your back, Dad.
The rest simply nodded, holding their weapons in an easy grip. They had done this 1,000 times before, but routine made a person careless, and being careless got a person chilled in the Deathlands. Stationing himself near the door of the chamber, Ryan stood guard alongside JB while the man checked the portal for booby traps. Traps were unusual, but a few other people knew about the secret of the redoubts, and while most of them were now in the boneyard, some were still sucking air and walking around. But this time the door was clear, and at JB's signal, Ryan worked the lever to swing it open. The Sig Sauer leading the way, Ryan took the point into the control room, with the others fanning out behind. The room appeared to be deserted, the only motion coming from the comps that operated the military base. Comp screens lined the walls, and control consoles winked and blinked in silent frenzy as the massive comps went silently about their imponderable functions. Then Doc whistled softly and gestured with the barrel of his big Lama. An entire section of the monitors was dark. Ryan didn't remember ever seeing that before. It made him uneasy to see the complex machinery do anything out of the ordinary. That almost always meant trouble. Mildred went to the front of a monitor and flipped down the tiny control panel to check the contrast and power.
The other machines are live and functioning. These ones are dead because they're not receiving any data.
Leave. Busted here means busted elsewhere.
Listening to the rest of the comps humming softly, Ryan gave the matter some serious thought. A malfunk could mean the rest of the base was frozen solid with ice, or flooded, or airless as the moon. Opening the door to the hallway could bring instant death. The comps did everything here, and if they were broken, then anything was possible. Damn things might have even cycled open the blast door to the outside world and let in anything, like stickies, runts, hellhounds, or a host of various muties. Automatically, Ryan checked the implode gren in a coat pocket. He'd need a lot of space to use the gren, but it could stop just about anything. The trick was to make sure the person throwing the implode didn't get aced along with the target. Ryan rubbed his unshaven jaw.
No, we aren't leaving yet. I want to check the hallway before deciding to make tracks. JB and Mildred, stay by the door to the Matrans chamber. But if we come running back, slam it tight behind us.
Got you covered.
The man and woman went back through the other doorway and into the chamber. This time, Christy and Jack stood guard, while Ryan placed a palm against the corridor to check for heat. It was warm, but not hot, so he listened for a moment for any sounds coming from the other side, then worked the handle and opened the door a crack. The corridor was empty. The overhead lights were working, but the bright glow of the fluorescent tubes had been reduced to a dim bluish sheen from the passage of the years. The air vents were still blowing warm air instead of cool, but Ryan was starting to wonder if that was deliberate. Maybe the redoubt was at the North Pole or inside a glacier, and it needed to be kept this warm. Anything was possible. The Predark government had hidden the subterranean bases in the oddest of places. Placing fingers in his mouth, Ryan whistled sharply twice, and JB and Mildred rejoined the group. With practiced ease, the group spread out in pairs and checked the offices lining the corridor, one person staying at the door while the other went inside. Then the pair switched and did the next room. As usual, Doc served as the anchorman, the colossal .44 Lama held as reserve firepower. As he kept track of the others as they moved from room to room, just for a split second, the scholar thought he heard a metallic noise and almost called out a warning. But when it didn't occur again, he grudgingly relaxed. After a few minutes, the companions regrouped at the end of the corridor near the elevator and the door to the stairwell. Christy slid off her heavy coat and tied the arms around her waist. The heat was starting to bother her slightly. Mildred patted one of her pockets.
Found a humidor with two cigars. But since JB is trying to quit, I'll just add him to the trade goods.
Thanks a heap.
No ammo, no booze. Lots of bottles, all dry.
Dean also reached into a pocket.
Couple of pencils and a lighter. Anybody need a replacement?
Tough and resilient, butane lighters were the gold of the new world. Even after 100 years, they still sparked a flame and worked for months with careful hoarding. Nearly worthless in the pre-dark society, now the plastic cartridges equaled a month of eating or a week of pleasure in a Ville's gaudy house.
Yeah, mine's almost dead.
Without comment, Dean passed it over. The woman flicked the lighter to make sure it worked and then tucked it away.
Thanks. There's nothing like those lighters for cauterizing a wound.
No prob.
The boy felt a touch of pride at finding something useful. Suddenly snapping her head to the left, Christy frowned at the empty corridor. Ryan glanced about with his good eye.
You feel something?
The hallway was clear, not even dust moving on the floor, but that was meaningless if Christy had a premonition of danger. She started to speak, but instead shook her head.
Nothing, I guess. Must have just been the air vents.
Duck frowned at that.
Indeed, madam, I also thought there had been a noise before, but I dismissed it as superfluous clatter.
Holstering his 9mm blaster, Ryan eased the butt of the Steyr SSG-70 out of his backpack and worked the bolt. First the redoubt was too hot, and now there were mysterious noises. This was not good.
Okay, let's get hard, people. Jack, Dean, watch the elevator. Anything that comes out, blast it. Duck and Mildred guard the stairs. The rest of us will walk down to the reactor on the bottom level, then come back up before searching the upper levels. This way we can know nothing is coming from behind.
Any trouble, fire around. If nobody comes back in 10, then come running.
I shall serve as Horatius.
Doc took position near the corner of the hallway. This offered a clear field of fire in two directions, and possible cover in case of incoming rounds.
Horatius had two companions with him on that bridge, and they both died, you know.
Leaning against the wall, Duck smiled widely, displaying his oddly perfect teeth.
Which is exactly why I was very careful to state that I alone was Horatius, and not you.
Glowering at the man, Mildred said something in Latin that made his eyebrows rise in shock, while Ryan eased open the door to the stairwell. As he did, a sound was clearly heard echoing down from the levels above. Something metallic and moving.
Air vent my ass.
Ryan started forward, then paused, and for a tense moment, sharply debated leaving. Whatever was happening here probably wasn't their concern. Then again, the redoubts were the lifelines of the companions. If there were people in here, they needed to know how they got inside, and what, if anything, they knew about the Matran system.
Dad?
That could have been a child.
Christy remembered a particularly gruesome event at a redoubt where the companions had arrived only seconds too late to save a young girl who was starving to death from taking her own life.
Knowledge is power, my dear Ryan.
Ryan looked at the old man. The traitor used to say that too. Ryan made his decision, almost against his better judgment.
Okay, we move as a group. I'm on point, 1 yard apart, 2-on-2 formation. Let's go.
Just a sec.
JB walked to the elevator and hit the call button. The indicator lights in the lintel chimed in response as the cage started to descend from the upper levels. Ryan nodded in approval at the distraction. Every little bit helped. Doc and Mildred quickly joined the others in the stairwell, and moving fast, the companions quietly started up the ancient stairs of the redoubt, blasters leading the way. At each level they paused, straining to hear anything, but there was only dusty silence. The dining hall, barracks, communications, medical, and storage, each section was as still as an empty tomb. At the top level, the companions paused before the last door and were rewarded by some sort of humming noise. JB set his fedora farther back on his head as a prelude to a fight.
Dark Knight, that sounds familiar. Just can't recall what the nuke it is, though.
Christie's hair coiled tightly in response to the tension.
I don't like this.
Got something?
Jack flexed his left hand. A knife slipped from the sleeve of his leather jacket into his palm at the gesture.
No, I'm not reading anything. This just feels wrong. A gut instinct.
I feel the same way.
With a worried expression on his young face, Dean grunted in agreement. There was no light coming from under the jamb, so working the latch carefully, Ryan opened the door slightly and held out a hand toward Doc. The scholar passed over his ebony stick, and easing it through the crack, Ryan reached toward the nearby light switch, flicked it on, and threw open the door. This top level was the garage of the redoubt, tool benches and storage rooms to the left, the exit corridor to the distant right. The rest of the cavernous room was filled with vehicles, mostly civilian wags, compact cars and station wagons, some falling apart from body rust, others in somewhat decent condition. However, a few of the larger machines were military wags, 4x4s, some Hummers, and even an APC. The armored personnel carrier was lacking wheels, the axles resting on the stained concrete floor above a dark grease pit, but the chassis seemed intact.
Hot pipe over there!
Dean started to fire his blaster. Ryan turned fast and triggered his long blaster without conscious thought. Across the garage was a 3-foot-wide crack in the nuke-proof wall. That was unusual, but not startling. They had found damaged redoubts before. Some of the weapons used in Skydark had been fantastically powerful. But standing directly in front of the crack was something potentially more dangerous than any nuke. At first glance, it resembled a chrome-plated humanoid, stooped over slightly like a hunchbacked ape. Its domed head was fronted with large crystalline eyes, the body composed of chrome rods and 2 elongated arms, one armed with a pneumatic hammer, the other sporting a set of tarnished blades that spun at blinding speed. That was the source of the humming noise. Even as he fired the Stire, Ryan narrowed his eye. A Sec Hunter droid. The companions had encountered these mech guardians of the redoubts before. Once a hunter got your scent, it could track a person through a crowd of 1,000 other people and across 10,000 miles, locked under the target's genetic code. The droid couldn't be turned off, diverted from the chase, or ever stopped until the allocated target was aced. With a grinding noise of rusted gears, the machine turned away from the crack and started for them, the hammer thumping loudly as the spinning blades thrust forward.
Double line!
The companions hit the droid with everything they had, knowing only seconds remained before it would reach them, and in the cramped confines of the stairwell, they would be chilled. Dropping to their knees, Jack and Doc threw thunder at the hunter with their big-bore blasters, while the others fired over their heads. Lead and steel hit everywhere on the machine in a deafening cacophony of firepower. The droid seemed undamaged. Then, the impossible happened. One of the chrome rods dented, then another, and a third broke apart. Encouraged, the companions concentrated on the opening in the droid's armored body. Wires snapped, and something crackled with electricity inside the machine. When it was only yards away, smoke began to pour from the battered torso, and then the spinning blades jammed motionless, almost tearing off the arm. The droid slowed its advance, but the companions continued to fire, expending ammo at a frightful rate. Suddenly, the pneumatic hammer stopped, the lights dimmed in the crystal eyes, fat blue sparks crackled over the machine, and it tipped over from the incoming barrage to crash onto the floor, sparking and oozing hydraulic fluid. Its limbs twitched for a few seconds, and then the machine went still.